So, in your own life, your personal life, your professional life, do you have a need? Do you feel a need to be more creative? Would that be helpful? Well, creativity is exactly what we're going to talk about today on this edition of Poetry, Passion, and Pleasure podcast with your host, Dale Byron. It's going to be a little different. We have a poem and we've got a kind of some poetic prose. But I really want to talk about the subject of creativity itself. And of course, the title this week is In Defense of Unsuccessful Art. And that tells you a little bit about the kind of ironic, paradoxical way that I want to deal with this question of how can we be, what's the stance that will help us be more creative in our lives, whether it's for creative writing, whether it's for essays, poetry, any kind of art, actually. But particularly, we're going to focus on memorable writing today. So, on this subject of how can we be more creative, what attitudinal stance can we take in our lives, I wanted to begin with a quote. It's about a paragraph long from the amazing, speaking of artists and writers, Ira Glass of public radio fame. He has his show, which many will be familiar with, is called This American Life. That's the same Ira Glass. And here's what he said. And I think this is really important when it comes to your own creative endeavors. I know that when I first saw this, it was quite impressive. You decide, though. Here's how it goes. Ira Glass said, "Nobody tells this to people who are beginners. Nobody tells this to people who are beginners." And again, beginning in some kind of creative process, some kind of artful creativity process. He says, "Nobody tells this to people who are beginners. I wish someone had told me. All of us who do creative work, we get into it because we have good tastes. But there is this gap. But there is this gap. For the first couple years, you make stuff. It's just not that good. It's trying to be good. It has potential, but it's not. But your taste, the thing that got you into the game, is still killer. And your taste is why your work disappoints you." Let that sink in for a minute. Your taste, your aesthetic is why your own work disappoints you. A lot of people never get past this phase. They quit. They quit. Most people I know who do interesting creative work went through years of this. We know our work doesn't have this special thing that we want it to have. We all go through this. And if you are just starting out, or you are still in this phase, you got to know that it's normal. And the most important thing you can do is do a lot of work. Put yourself on a deadline so that every week you finish one piece. It's only by going through a volume of work that you will close that gap, and your work will be as good as your ambitions. In other words, your work will be as good as your own personal aesthetic. He goes on. He says, "And I took longer to figure out how to do this than anyone I've ever met. It's going to take a while. It's normal to take a while. You just got to fight your way through. You just got to fight your way through." So the reason I was so impressed with this is because, I don't know, think about this. Does it resonate with you? Does it resonate whether your creativity is in a business professional sense, or whether it's again more typically an art endeavor like poetry, like essay writing, that sort of thing, or some other art, music, painting, whatever. The truth is that we are attracted to it because we have good taste, as Ira Glass says. We have a sense of what is of what works, what is magic in terms of the art, because we have such good taste. And which is also predictable, predictable, excuse me, as Ira Glass says here, is that our own ability, our own skill level, our own level of discipline, and our chops, sometimes you use that word, or our skill level, is not going to be up to our own taste, our own aesthetic. So we're going to, at least for some period of time, he says for a long time for him, the produce, the production that you create, the art that you create is not going to be up to your standards. And if we don't really grok that, if we don't really understand that, then I think it can get us into trouble because we just, you know, we give up. We give up. You know, my mentor poet, who I've mentioned many times on this podcast, William Stafford, was very much into this whole thing of, he says, I wrote so many poems that I ran out of titles and had to use some of them twice. You know, he just was, somebody would say, well, what is your, what's your favorite poem? He says, the last one I wrote. So the idea was, is that poetry making for William Stafford, again, right along these lines, poetry making was more fun, more important in a way than any particular poem. And so therefore the pleasure that he received had him just chug, 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 chug on. He said he wrote 4 or 5 poems a day. He wrote an hour, hour and a half, first thing in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And a little later as he got older. But the point is that if we just have enough volume, that we are going to eventually, if we're getting pleasure from the writing, pleasure from the art, pleasure from creating the art, then we're going to hang in there long enough so that our own personal art is going to begin to reach the level of our own aesthetic, so that our standard and what we can actually produce begin to come into balance. Now, I'm not saying every piece. I write, you know, poetry and songwriting are my two sort of artistic things, and essays. I love to write essays, but and not every one of them seems to be thrilling to me, you know. But over the years, having been involved with poetry for many, many years, I can say that I get closer. You know, my expression is, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. So I get closer, you know, to my own expectations with my own art. And I try not to take any one piece that seriously, but I do take the creating of art, the creating of poetry, the creating of essays very seriously. So I promised a poem. And this is a little piece that I wrote back in February of 2021. So a few years ago, it was called In Defense of Unsuccessful Art. And of course, this edition of the podcast is named after that. So In Defense of Unsuccessful Art. Okay. Starts out like this. Oh, I'll admit it's hard to define beyond the obvious characteristics of obscurity. Now, we're talking about unsuccessful art, right? I'll admit it's hard to define beyond the most obvious characteristics of obscurity, those constant letters of rejection, what unsuccessful art actually smells like versus, say, the kind that haunts museum walls or the pages of literary magazines. Listen. Van Gogh was said to have sold exactly one painting his entire life. Does that qualify for irony? The profit motive, maybe? Or should we mention that part about his ear again and Starry Nights? Rilke, that great poet genius who famously couldn't afford his own books, although if he still owned a few of his original manuscripts these days, he could surely pay off all his student loans. And Emily Dickinson had a pretty sweet deal herself. Her room's rent paid forever, I think. Nice part of town, living upstairs and all. Emily proved that talent and fame are not always tethered together. For example, You can write brilliant words, burn the midnight oil, dream wildly, and then die perfectly obscure but happy, all with a ticking time bomb of fame hidden inside an old leather trunk up underneath your bed, filled with all those maybe next times. Well, that little poem in defense of unsuccessful art really begs a question, and I think it's around all this stuff that we're talking about. My note says, what rejection teaches? What does rejection teach us that cannot be learned any other way? Well, rejection, if you're going to do some kind of art, if you're going to use art in whatever way, essays, poetry, business writing, right? Any of that, you're going to suffer through those difficulties we're talking about before your chops, before your skills reach the level of your own aesthetic. And so that tells me that rejection on some level teaches that process and helps us hopefully persevere. I was thinking, the references in this poem, of course, are all true. Rilke did say once that he could hardly afford his own books of poetry. Van Gogh sold, I do think, one painting before he died. And that might have been sold to his own brother who supported him. And then Emily Dickinson, of course, famously, wrote and wrote and wrote and kept stashing her poems up underneath her bed in this leather case, leather trunk. And as we know, virtually all of the poems of Emily Dickinson, maybe one was published, I think, as I recall, but her poems were discovered after she died. And so it's just a question that we ask ourselves. If we find something that we love, that we're incredibly pulled toward, some kind of art that we get joy from, if we continue to persevere, if we continue on that process, and if we don't beat ourselves down too much, because initially, at least, we are not able to meet our own standard. And as Ira Glass says, it may take quite a while. That's why it's important to pick the piece of art to, or pick not the piece of art, but to the method of art, whether it's writing or whatever it is, pick something that you love and get pleasure out of. You're much more likely to stick with it until your own skill level reaches your own aesthetic. I was thinking as I was putting this episode together that over the years, I have submitted poems to the Sun magazine, have not had one published there yet. And they send the sweetest rejection letters. One of the challenges I had is that in the first two or three years of my writing many years ago, I did have a couple of poems published, and it was almost like it was too easy, you know. And but I love the Sun magazine. In the way they turn poets who send poems to them that they don't use. They just have a very sweet way of saying, we really appreciate what you're doing here, and we just can't use this particular piece. So in that case, it makes the rejection a little bit easier. And of course, you know, famously, even the most famous poets have walls papered with rejection letters. That's just part of the deal. That's just part of the deal. If you want to be in that game. So as I said in the last stanza of this poem, in defense of unsuccessful art, Emily proved that talent and fame are not always tethered together. For example, you can write brilliant words, burn the midnight oil, dream wildly, and then die perfectly obscure but happy, all with a ticking time bomb of fame hidden inside an old leather trunk up underneath your bed, filled with all those maybe next times. So, of course, the maybe next times are the rejection. In her case, though, she was not sending these poems. She was writing them for her own pleasure. And isn't it amazing that from her own pleasure, these poems that she wrote became some of the most beloved pieces of art, pieces of poems, poetry in the American canon. Just amazing art. Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope my conversation on creativity has been helpful. Like I always say, if you learned something or liked something or felt something, then, you know, make a comment or like the post, or in particular, refer it to somebody who you think might enjoy this approach to poetry and sometimes even creativity we'll talk about. So until next time, as I always say, please, until next time and next poems or next essays or next paragraphs, please take good care of yourself. And if you can, please take good care of someone else.